Hello and welcome to another episode of Flicks. My name is Daniel Swan. Thank you so much for joining me. It's lovely of you to do today. It's December. It's getting into Christmas vibes now. Watched four Christmas films yesterday, which was quite wonderful. One of them was a bit of a chore. It was a little bit Jesus-y for my liking. That's not what we're talking about here today, though. We might talk about that in a subsequent one, though. It might be quite interesting, quite fun to talk about. The Jesus film. I don't know. What we are instead talking about, as again, you know, because you've clicked the fucking link. It's Flicks is something that has been going now for, this is going to be the 39th episode, which just off the bat is, I'm pretty excited about. I'm pretty pleased about. And I'm just ignoring the fact that, you know, 38 people have not listened to it. There's far more episodes than people listening to this, but even with that, I think that's still quite a nice achievement, quite a fun thing. But in those 38 prior episodes, it's been fairly accessible, I think. The kind of things that myself and my wife and French Brownie Rob and John and Mike and James, of course. Have talked about have been fairly accessible, fairly universal things, films that everybody would have watched or might have watched or could watch at least. But this one is going a little bit different, and will be the flicks so far with the least universal appeal, even for, against the previous ones. This will be maybe a little bit less. So basically, I shot a film myself. For those who don't know, which is none of you, because you know everyone who's listening to this knows me personally. But it's I aspire at least to be a screenwriter. There's a school of thought that says, hey, you know, you should if you want to be a screenwriter, you should say you're a screenwriter. Because then that's kind of positive mental attitude. That's the kind of visualization. Hey, no, I am this. Like, this is the thing. Being paid to do something doesn't necessarily make you more worthy a thing. But then there's also an argument saying, you know, don't, you know, then that's something to work towards. It's like, well, I'm aspiring. I'm not, it keeps humble and all of that kind of stuff. I don't know which side of the argument I fall upon. But I write things. I write films. Short films generally, some, you know, pilots for TV shows and the very occasional feature film, although they're very difficult, very tricky things to write, take a long time. But these are the things that I write, and one of my New Year's resolutions last year was to film something that I had written. Now, I film, you will probably be aware, or you should be aware if you don't, that I don't know, I haven't worked out a way of explaining this without sounding like a dickhead, but I have a character that I perform as, and I have a YouTube channel for him, and I have a Facebook page for him. He's a guy called Not Me. He's an artist. He's an asshole. He's up himself. He's lonely. He's pretentious. He's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun to be him. Because he's kind of just me, you know, without the extra little voice in my head that says, no, don't say that, Dan, that'll make you a wanker. So I do that, and with him, I film things, and I film little videos with him. And so it needed to be something more than that. It needed to be something, I want to film something that would be better than something that I could film on my own. More involved, in, you know, kind of bringing in other people. And as with any deadline that I've ever had in my life, I left it to the last minute. So it got to kind of October, November time, and I was like, if I want to get this done, I should really write something. So I wrote something, or it was something that I'd written before, and I took it to a screenwriting group that I go to here in Seattle, a meetup thing, and I got good feedback on it, which is good. And it was written to be filmed. That's an email. It was written to be filmed with that express intention. And so it was all very simple. It was all kind of locations that were very easy to get. There were a few of them, but it was the kind of editing between, or the kind of changing in locations, and the transitions would hopefully make it interesting in spite it being, you know, pretty simple and straightforward overall. And so I liked that. But then I thought, well, potentially I may have, this may be the only film that I ever write or that I ever direct. If I try it and I hate it, then I might never get to, you know, might never direct anything else. So I was like, well, I want it to be something that, and again, something that you will probably but may not know about me, is that I'm a huge fan of shared universes. That gives me a real kind of creative erection, shall we say. The kind of the Marvel Studios films being a prime example of, they all, you know, these are different stories happening in the same universe, in the same place, in the same time, just at different parts of the world. Something about that, like when you're reading a kind of Fantastic Four comic book and they need a lawyer, and then Matt Murdock shows up, and he doesn't show up as Daredevil, he just shows up as Matt Murdock. It's like, oh my god, because he's Daredevil and they just all live in the same city, and it's amazing. So that makes me very, very happy. So then I wrote another thing to do with this idea that I've had for ages of kind of what happens after you die, kind of to deal, I suppose, with my crippling fear of death, where it's once you die, you either go into either a heaven or a hell, you know, somewhere in between. Or if you haven't achieved your potential, then you have to go and work for heaven. And there's various different jobs that you have in heaven and blah, blah, blah. And it's the fantastic mundane thing of like, they're doing incredible things, but it's just like an office job. And, you know, it makes me very happy. So I wrote, I've had written several things set in this universe before. And so I thought, well, if I write something short, then that will kind of, that could be something that I do. And then at least I would have this thing and I would have a role in it, and it would be a role that would lead maybe other things, you know. So there was that element to it. But then the more I wrote that, and that was pretty much one location, just one house that I would have to source. Of course, I'd have to befriend somebody who lived in a house that could fit the bill. But then it would just be in that one location. But then I was looking at it, and I've heard from kind of various directors that I've, you know, read or watched interviews with, it's very difficult, it's very complicated to shoot scenes with lots of people present. Like, the more people there are, the more complicated it gets, because the more coverage you have to get, the more setups there are, etc. So I thought, well, maybe that's too complicated for me, and especially, you know, with me being in it, maybe that's not the best idea either. So then I wrote another one where it was about as simple as you could possibly get. It was one indoor location, which would be my flat, and then one outdoor location, which would be at the Seattle Center, which you can get a permit for, and it's all very straightforward, and it's just a phone conversation. It's like the least cinematic thing that you could possibly do, but it's simple. It's just one person talking into a phone, and then cutting to another scene shot on a different day of another person talking into a phone, and that's all it is. And it was like 10 pages of that, which is maybe too long, I don't know. And so I thought, well, let's do that. And then I found an actress. It was an actress that I'd met before doing the 48-hour film challenge in Seattle. And she seemed really good. And so I wanted to do it with her. I thought she would do pretty well with it. And I even went as far as to kind of meet up with her. I sent her the script and she seems to like it. But then it's the problem with using good actors, good talent, is that they get booked up. And her Christmas ended up being pretty ram-jammed. So then I thought, well, rather than, like, saying, well, fuck you then, I want to do it quickly, I'd leave that until the new year, and then hopefully, and then that, you know, I can have a bit more of a run-up to that. It is a little bit more complicated than I kind of considered beforehand in terms of getting permits and cameras and lights and whatnot. So then let's postpone that. But then another friend I had, a guy who I met through the screenwriting group, a guy called Josh Henning, who's a very talented guy and kind of a one-man gang, really, in terms of filming stuff. He's got a lot of kit. which is pretty cool. Look, he's got a camera and he's got lights and he's got sound equipment and various bits and pieces that he's kind of cobbled together over his years of trying to do this, which is very cool. It makes him an incredibly valuable resource and a lovely chap. He had said that he was free on these days, and so if I wanted to do something on those days, then he would be, you know, more than happy to help out. So I thought, well, fuck it, let's try and write something else. So this is now the fourth version of this script, each one getting less and less complicated, until eventually the script that I ended up with was just it's just one person talking to somebody else who turns out isn't actually there. So it's just one person in a kitchen, which is my kitchen, in a flat, which is my flat. So I think this worked out as, like, this is the simplest. This is absolutely the least complicated thing that I could possibly do. And it's a script called Delicious Enough for Kids, which is a weird name for a film, which is something that I always try and do. I was in a, when I was acting back in the UK, I was in a film a few years ago now, I don't know, 2012, 2011, something like that. So like 4 or 5 years ago. There was a great film by a guy called Fabio Yunis, and he put it into festivals, and it did pretty well, actually. I got some nice write-ups out of it, which was very, very, very pleasing. And he called that A Stable for Disabled Horses. And he said that from calling it that, he would never call a short film something boring again, because it's something that's immediately captivating. It's immediately, or recognisable at least, memorable in the world of short film festivals, where people are going to be seeing 20 or 30 films a day potentially. The idea of having this weird name is immediately, you know, obviously the film has got to be good for them to remember it in a positive way, but at least that allows you to stand out from, oh my God, Loss, or you know, Nighttime, or something, you know, very generic and boring. So I called it, yeah, Delicious Enough for Kids, based on a line that's in it. And it's essentially, I mean, the gist of it is that there's a woman who is preparing a meal in a very kind of busy, frantic way, and it's all kind of would be edited very kind of hectically and strangely and jarringly, hopefully. And she's holding a conversation with somebody off camera, who she looks at a couple of times, but we never really see him particularly close up. And it talks about, she's essentially making this meal to kind of prove to him that she can be kind of caring and nurturing and providing and being a mother, essentially. And it transpires through their conversation that he left because he didn't think he wanted to have kids with her, but now he's come back because he's realized that he does want to have kids with her, which she's very pleased about. And there's a kind of allusions in the script given to that maybe her mother wasn't particularly good, which is why she might be so kind of intent on the idea of having kids. And from, you know, personal experience, people that I've known, you know, logic goes out of the window to some degree when anybody wants to have kids, because it's, you know, do you want to, you know, spend all this money and, you know, potentially have this kid resent you, or, you know, the idea that you have to have kids, I think, is something that I'm often quite critical of, because I don't, oh, this is getting a bit deep, isn't it? I don't necessarily love the idea of having kids. But it's such a kind of societal thing of, like, well, you have to have kids, of course you do. Whereas the reality of it is, these days, you know, with overpopulation, the more conscientious thing to do in a larger scale thinking is to not have kids. But nobody really kind of thinks about that. So yeah, when people want to have kids, it's like, it's a pathological, like, I fucking need to have these kids. And so she kind of goes a bit nuts and whatnot. And then she brings the meal over to the table, and we see that the guy isn't actually sitting there, so it's all in her head, and she's just a bit crazy. And the rest of that little kind of there's a little conversation at the end that's shot as if he is there, so it's just shot very simply, in a kind of, you know, a two shot and then two close ups. But obviously the close up of him is just a shot of an empty chair. But I quite like that idea of shooting it as if he is there, but he just isn't there. So it's kind of the camera, I suppose, in terms of the perspective of the camera, it's kind of still with her point of view, even though we can't actually see him. As I was going through filming, I realised that was just could imply that he's like the invisible man in some way, which is not necessarily what I intended. But hopefully people would just get the idea that something's going on. It's a bit weird. She's a bit mental, and it's all a bit messed up. That would be the hope. And then the specific kind of meaning that they attribute to that would be, you know, kind of on top of that. So that's the general gist of it. That's the general plot of it. It was the kind of thing. So I started with that end idea of having a conversation with somebody who, and the camera's moving, and it's, you know, it's as if the person's there, but they're not actually there. And then kind of working backwards, which I kind of feel like with short films and such, because it's, you know, feature films are very tight, well, they should be at least, very tightly structured endeavours. It's like this happens, and this happens, and there's a turning point, and then there's a rising tension, and then there's all of this, all of these kind of screenwriting bits and pieces to go through. But for short films, because I feel like they work slightly differently, and you know, you might get an idea of like, right, this is the idea that this is a great idea for how a film could start, and then you kind of work it through, or this is a great moment within a film, how do you work to that, and then what's the fallout from that, or as this one, this is a great ending for a film, what kind of situation, what characters would end up in that situation, and how can we get there? So that was kind of how it came to be, and it. Yeah, it worked out quite nicely. So Josh was helping out in terms of he was the crew, essentially. So I met him through the screenwriting group, meetup group. And then, we did the 48-hour film thing together, or kind of I worked on his film with that, which was fun. And we've kind of stayed in contact and met up a few times since. He's a nice guy, and I mean the film wouldn't have been able to take place without him and his gear. Very, very cool that he got on board. But then it's like, well, who's going to be this woman? Who's going to be this lady? And so then it goes into casting calls, and obviously I wasn't particularly confident with this, bearing in mind that I was putting out a casting call on Tuesday to film the following Monday. So it was all a little bit mental and crazy, and I thought, well, there's a very good chance that if anybody does reply to a casting call, that I'll just have to say yes, because chances are they'll be the only person who is, you know, wanting to do something for no money, you know, couldn't pay anybody, who's wanting to do something for no money at very late notice on a weekday, so obviously couldn't have a proper job. So I put out some casting calls on Tuesday. I put one out on a website called starnow.com, which I knew more from the UK than the US. It was a bit of a punt to see whether it was a thing in the US as well as the UK, and it is, but I didn't get any responses from that, so that might be, it might not be as big in the US, or it might just be too big for people to volunteer to be in 3-page scripts that didn't pay any money. I put a casting call up on Mandy.com, which is another website that deals with kind of actors and crew and such, which I don't think I got any responses from that either, which is a bit disappointing. I put one up on Craigslist, which for the uninitiated, essentially, it's an American Gumtree, where you can just put on, you know, I'm selling an oven, I want a painter decorator, whatever it might be, you can put it up on there. Which means that there's probably a fair amount of crazies. So I was kind of, conscious of that. And I tried to put some up on some Facebook groups, for some, like, kind of casting Seattle local area Facebook groups. But then you need to, like, click to join the group, which I never understand, because they didn't have, obviously all they had to go on me was just my Facebook profile, and I don't really have, because I've got the Daniel Swan Facebook profile, and then I've got my actual Facebook, which is what I had to do it through, because it's, you know, various annoyances with having a page on Facebook and the things that a page can and cannot do. So it had to be through my regular Facebook, so I don't really have any acting or production stuff on there. So obviously they didn't have any clues that I was who I said, who, you know, somebody who genuinely was interested in it and wasn't mental, but yet they just approved me anyway. So you just think, well, why bother making people, you know, anyway. So yeah, I put some up on the Facebook groups, but I had to get approval. So that was like Wednesday that they ended up going up. But then they ended up being the most, the ones that I got the most interest through, which is interesting. And I think, yeah, it just goes to show that Facebook is just something that so much of so many people's lives goes through these days. Yeah, so there were quite a few people that went through there and asked people to send me an email. And I ended up getting like 5 or 6 people, which I was incredibly surprised about. Some people kind of models coming through, which is crazy also, because people just send you, like, if they're a mod, and I don't know, again, this is the pervert in me, but like people, like models just send you, oh yeah, this is just a picture of me in my underwear. You're like, absolutely. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. But yeah, actresses and various bits, various people getting in touch, which was nice. Some people with kind of acting bits and pieces to show for it, and some people without. But I was, you know, this is my first film directing. Not that I put that in the casting call, of course. But this is my first thing directing, so I quite like the idea of people kind of helping each other out at this stage in the career. Yeah, so then I asked the people who didn't have stuff online to send through, to like record themselves just on a phone or whatever. It was a little bit New Zealand, to send through. I wrote a little audition speech, which then asked them to kind of perform and record and send back to me. Only one person actually did, Julie, who was the person that I ended up picking. I mean, obviously I wouldn't have picked her if she was terrible, but she was good, and I thought the fact that she's done this, you know, that can't be anything but a good thing. So she sent through a thing, and that was really good. And the actual process of writing that speech was really good as well, because it was such a short time frame, I kind of knocked out the script in one sitting. I had the idea in my head and I just kind of hashed it through, because it's only 3 pages long. And then through the process of sending it out to people for auditions, I was reading it through again. I was like, I'd maybe change this, and this could be tweaked a little bit. And in terms of writing a speech for the character of Kirsty, I think I called her, that was really useful for me in terms of getting into that character's head, which sounds awful and terrible and wanky, but I always think, yeah, it's an interesting thing whenever, like, in situations where I was acting, an actor is always going to put more effort and emphasis, or maybe not more, but as much effort and emphasis into their character than the screenwriter, because they've got a vested interest in this character. And so as a writer, I think it's I suppose your job to kind of put in that actor's level of interest into each different character, and especially for this, I mean, there's only fucking one character essentially, and then another character who's a construct of her imagination. And so that was, yeah, really, really useful for me, and brought some stuff in to subsequent changes that I made to the script. So yeah, that's something that I definitely would do again, in terms of just writing a little kind of, you know, even if it's just 100-150 word monologue for them, explaining themselves, explaining their motivations, or writing a letter to another character, or whatever it might be, just to kind of really entrench yourself into what this character's thinking. Then I met up with Josh on the Friday, and we went through the script, went through some ideas, and how he would want to shoot it. Because, I mean, I've never been a particularly visual guy in terms of my writing. I'm always more of a dialogue chap, and so that was imperative for me of getting him on board and working out, speaking to him about what his ideas were and what he thought would be a good way of doing certain bits and pieces. It was essentially a film of 2 sections. There's the kitchen sequence at the beginning, where she's very hectic and chopping all the stuff and stirring all the stuff and cooking. And then the second section at the table. At the table was fairly straightforward, because I kind of had more of an idea of what I wanted from that. Bearing in mind that was, you know, the idea that kicked off the whole thing. And then But then the first sequence, the kitchen thing, I wanted it to be a lot more hectic and just get lots of inserts and lots of little close-ups and lots of, you know, various bits and pieces, and then just edit it together, because obviously I'd be the editor as well. So we didn't storyboard or plan out the kitchen sequence, which I think was maybe a mistake. And then we kind of set the idea of having a three-hour shoot. 3 hours for three pages, especially with kind of one setup in terms of lighting, really, maybe two. We thought it'd work out okay. So then it got to the shoot day. There were slight delays on the shoot day because it was snowing, which was annoying, so that kind of delayed some people getting here and in terms of setting up. And then Julie arrived, and we had a little chat, because obviously I'd never met her before. So we had a little chat, kind of got to know each other a little bit, and kind of talked through the script and the kind of ideas that I had, and the ideas that she had, and the questions that she had, which I think set us back quite a lot, to be honest. Because then when we started filming and we were doing the, you know, doing that beginning bit, which was most of the filming would have been that anyway. But then at one point, Josh mentioned that if we wanted to stick to the existing plan, that we had half an hour left to film, which was terrifying. So we ended up going over. Of course we did. So then we went over. It was all a little bit more hectic after that and a little bit more stressful. But there is a definite power from being on film sets before and thinking, oh, maybe I would have done that maybe slightly differently. I would have, you know, shot that a little differently or had a different kind of vibe for that or dealt with that actor in a slightly different way. It's a bit of an intoxicating power rush to have everything, because everything's, you know... In terms of being a director, it's the old kind of adage that you don't actually really do anything. You just say yes or no. Your job is to help the other, you know, make the other people do their jobs in a way that fits in with what your idea was, your kind of vision is. And so you're not really doing that much at all. You're just telling other people what to do. And there's a fun power to that, even though there's only two people. There was a camera dude and an acting person. You can understand why people enjoy it so much. There's that, and it's the thing that everyone wants to do. There's that old joke of Mother Teresa on a deathbed and people saying, you know, you've lived this incredible life. Is there anything that you've done that you hadn't done that you wished you had? And she's like, I always wanted to try directing, because it's, you know, everybody wants to do that because it's, in many ways, a very easy, very, very easy job, but a very stressful job as well. Very, very rushy. There's no sitting down. There's no relaxing, because somebody, your time is always being needed by somebody. Somebody's always got a question for you, and nothing happens without your say so, without you pushing it to happen. It's fun, and it's feels powerful, oddly powerful. I felt like a tough brute man, but it is quite tiring as well at the same time. So we ran over until about 3:30, so it was about an hour and a half over, so 4.5 hours, which I don't think is necessarily a terrible thing. I just maybe think I should have realized that it was going to take longer than it was beforehand. And then we finished and we packed up all the gear, and we were, Josh had left by 4, and then it was all done. There were a couple of little kind of extra bits. In the end, I had to say that I wouldn't get any more of the close-ups of Julie doing the cooking stuff, because obviously she was the most important kind of commodity in the film. And so it was only shooting stuff of her face while she was cooking, and then the actual hands, I would then shoot my wife, which I subsequently did the following night, chopping stuff up and stirring stuff and doing all various bits and pieces. So that was all stuff that we could pick up later. And then the actual shot, because I was playing the fictional boyfriend, which is only for a couple of shots, but we didn't manage to get them done either, so I had to do them a couple of days afterwards. So as it is now, everything is shot, and everything is uploaded onto the, or transferred over to the computer, and it's just a case of editing now, which is going to take a long time, I think, at least initially. Because we didn't have a sound person to kind of say, well, this is this take and this is this take, The sound was just recording the whole time. So it's going to be, yeah, quite a tricky editing process, I think. Which is making me a little bit wary of starting it. Not wary, but a little bit reticent to start, because I know that the beginning part of it's not going to be a fun part. It's not going to be the actual cutting. But yeah, I'll get around to it eventually. So yeah, it was a great experience. It's something that I think I would like to do again. In terms of lessons that I learned from it, number one, to always storyboard and plan a shot list. Even if it is for like, oh yeah, but I just want to fucking go with the flow. Like, that doesn't work. Should always... Because if you're just thinking, oh my God, yeah, but it's a weird... like, it's like a dream sequence. I just want to kind of see what the flow is at the moment. That just means that you're not preparing enough. You're not thinking about it enough before the event. Because when it gets to it... I was speaking to my friend Rob, who's going to be directing a film in the new year. And hopefully we'll get him on talking about it through Flix and get a series of them, which I think will be quite interesting to go through the kind of process of that film, which is obviously on a much grander scale than mine. But he was talking about an Edgar Wright interview that he read, where he was saying that the actual shooting of a film is, for him, is not necessarily the most interesting part, because you've done so much prep work beforehand that the actual shooting of the film is just all very kind of procedural. It's like, well, I know exactly what's going to happen from one moment to the next, and so it's just about getting it done. Whereas it's the prior stuff, the preparation, that's the most important. And I, yeah, would absolutely agree with that, and I think I probably didn't do enough preparation for this. And it, on that same theme, the fact that I didn't meet up with Julie beforehand, I think hurt it as well. That's what meant that it ran over by so much, simply by virtue of the fact that I'd never met her before. So you don't just want to be a dick and just say, hi, yes, welcome, thank you for doing this film for no money, now start acting, for fuck's sake. You want to kind of, you know, we want it to be a nice and friendly set, and, you know, welcome and all of that kind of stuff, and kind of get to know her a little bit, and then discuss the script and questions and issues and ideas and various bits and pieces like that. So that all kind of cuts into your shooting time. I think we would have been absolutely fine if I'd met up with Julie, or even just spoken to her on the phone beforehand, just so that when she arrived at 11:30 or whenever it was, we could say, right, let's get shooting. We know what we're doing. You know who the character is. You know the kind of vibage that I'm looking for, so let's just get going. I think we would have been absolutely fine then, but it was that extra kind of talking stuff that kind of took up the time. So yeah, I'd always in future will be meeting up with actors beforehand and kind of discussing and rehearsing and all of that kind of stuff. And also something that I think will work in my favor when it comes to the editing, if you are shooting a film and you're not particularly confident at shooting films, then make it a weird film. Make it some kind of dream sequence. Make it some kind of, you know, there's, you know, an element of fantasy about it. There's an element of something beyond the mundane, because then that allows a lot of cracks to be papered over. Like, oh, why does this look a bit weird? Why do these two shots look very strange together? Why is this very stylized? Because it's all in our head, so, you know, you can kind of get away with stuff a little bit more like that. So I think, yeah, I hope at least that once I get to editing it, that's going to be something that I'm very pleased that I made that decision, or wrote a film that was a little bit odd, to allow for some of the issues that crop up maybe to be hand waved a little bit. Obviously, you don't want to rely on that too much, but as a small thing, I think. I think I can lean on that a little bit, which will be fun. So that's delicious enough for kids at this stage. I might do another one after editing it, but possibly not. I might just mention it in a subsequent episode. But I wanted to get this down. I don't know if it is a thing of somebody listening to it and thinking, oh, you know, I could edit, I could direct something, or I could, you know, might get some kind of wisdom from that. Somebody who isn't interested in it at all, but it might be interesting to kind of hear about the process of making a little no budget 3-minute film. I don't know. I think in large part it's just for me, really, to have some kind of record of so I don't forget this in the future, and I can listen back to this and think, oh yeah, that was that film that I made. Hopefully The first film of many, and hopefully the worst film I ever make. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for giving me a little chunk of your time. If you want to get in touch, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, issues, if you want to tell me about your film that you made, or whatever you want, if you want to get in touch, please do. Nobody ever does, so please do. Facebook.com/TheDanielSwan. On the website, danielswan.squarespace.com. Instagram and Twitter, at Palugin, PALOOGIN. Or just send me an email, danielswan41@gmail.com. Until next episode. Oh, Jesus Christ. Until next episode, because it's Christmassy. Until next episode, you should watch... you should watch Christmas Lodge. It's streaming on Amazon Instant Video. So hopefully you can get that. I will warn you, it's a terrible film, but I want to talk about it in a subsequent episode, and I think you'll get a lot more enjoyment out of it if you've watched it as well. So watch Christmas Lodge. It's kind of Jesus-y. It's kind of terrible. The lighting is atrocious, which is not something that you'll often say about a film, but this fucking hell really was. So yeah, give that a watch. And then also watch a good Christmas film after that, something of your Home Alones or your Elves or your Muppet Christmas Carol, something like that. But yeah, thank you so much for giving me the time of day, and I'll be speaking to you again sometime soon. Cheers.